Right now it is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal. John and Janet join us on a weekly basis, and we take a look at the stories that they're following, not only in the Lakeville Journal, but also the Millerton News. And we say good morning, John, and good morning, Janet.
Good morning.
And I want to say congratulations. I saw your article on Emily Edelman when I took a look at the paper last night on my computer. And we had Emily in here at the radio station. She actually worked at KZE before here, and then she worked for us for a while. And it's nice to see her coming down from Massachusetts to be back in our area and be over at the Millerton News.
Yes, we're very excited about Emily joining us. She has been working with me for about a month or so, spending time in Millerton, meeting people, helping to plan coverage. So I think you have a good experience with her. Everybody else we know has had a very good experience, and we're just really looking forward to having her help us cover Eastern Dutchess County.
I always thought with Emily and everybody when of course Emily worked with us, she was much younger, but it was great to see somebody that wanted to go into the journalism aspect of the career. And the radio worked out for a portion of it, but she truly wanted to be a journalist, and that was different than working at what she was doing with here at the radio station and even at WKZE. So it's just nice to hear the fact that that she's back and she's working with you guys. I think that's terrific news.
It is really great. We're so happy to have her. We're happy for Millerton and our New York State coverage. I know it's going to be a good era now.
Yep, you got somebody who's committed. That's all I can say, and replaces somebody who was very committed as
exactly.
Well. That's the important thing. There will be no drop off in
right.
What the Millerton News was doing. She is. You couldn't ask for a better replacement.
That's so. Right. So all New York State readers, listeners, please get to know Emily. Contact her. She's here for you.
All right. We'll go to the front page. And, you know, I got the press release and the announcement from Salisbury Bank and Trust and put it up on our Facebook page first and then on the radio. And I'll be honest with you, I was surprised about the concern that it raised. A lot of people are very interested in this story, and that is the merger of Salisbury Bank with NBT.
Well, yes. I mean, Salisbury Bank has been growing in our region for some time, especially under Rick Cantelli. It's a president and chief executive officer. He's done a great job and has grown the bank to up to, I think, now 14. There are 14 branches in Connecticut, in New York, and Massachusetts. And so I think any time there's change, there's some concern. He did say that the vast majority of customer-facing employees would still be here. Just uncertain how it will all shake out. And I think a lot of people were unaware of NBT Bank. This is not a bank that's a household name, so to speak. So it is a much bigger bank. It has 140 locations in several New England and New York locations. So it's just one of those things where change comes and people are not sure what it means.
All right. I think that's what I saw about it. The question that was asked to me, and who's taking over who is what is what people wanted the answer to. And I think your article summarizes exactly what the details of the transition are. So if people have questions, they should obviously pick up the paper and take a look at the story, because it answers a lot of those questions that are out there. Right below it, an important story, the state has extended our gas tax holiday. Of course, they're going to extend it, but they also have plans to, over the long haul, end it, because, of course, we just can't keep raiding that fund.
Right. On last April, there was a 25% per gallon holiday put on, or gas tax break put on gas for a holiday that was going to really expire on November 28th. And the legislature I believe Lamont called them together to consider reinstating somewhat of a staggered holiday that begins really now through May 1st, that will sort of notch the price back up 5 cents per month. So the idea is to give people a continued break. Gasoline prices have come down, but they're still not what everybody would love to have. There are other pieces to that legislation which the governor did sign, and that is the low-income home energy assistance program, so that people can get a break on heating this winter. And there's also a component to it which was just a business related to bottle deposit program that was giving really the retailers a break to get some new rules on bottles, because there will be some more kinds of drinks that will be subject to a nickel deposit.
All right. Right next to that, and Deb Alexander, so once again, bracing not only individuals and people, but actually health officials, bracing for what they predict will be a big onslaught of the flu season.
Right, and I almost think many people don't need to know that this story's in the paper because they have the flu. It has been really calling an early onslaught of seasonal flu, with a lot of viral infections and also some still COVID-19 circulating around. There apparently are something like 10 different viruses out there causing what Dr. Marshall at Charon is calling flu plus. Things that are causing this really are people are taking a little bit more risk in terms of their behavior. They're not masking as much. There also was a sort of hiatus in the flu because of all the masking last year. And then there are people who still aren't getting the flu vaccine. So we are the hospitals are having an experience of more and more people, on their, especially in their lab results, showing that there's flu out there.
All right. Now, you've got a story, once again, on Save Charon Hospital. On the 6th, of course, they had the testimony in Hartford, and the public, I mean, it ran a long, long time. There were people that spoke who worked at the hospital, I think 7 or 8, who spoke in favor of it. But just a lot of people voicing their opinions against what that plan calls for.
Right. We, of course, have been covering this story all along, and the roundtables that Save Charon Hospital is having, as well as the Charon Hospital side of things. Yesterday's hearing, Tuesday's hearing, was almost 11 hours. It started at 10 a.m. on time and didn't finish till 9:36. And it was, state officials, Marie Horn, Representative Harding. There were people from New York State, lawyers from both sides. It was a full hearing. We have something up on our website, Tri-Corner News, which is a quick little look at how that hearing went. But we'll have a full coverage next week.
All right, a big story, of course, and this is just the first. There's going to be another one of these hearings for what's going on with the emergency room situation and how they're transforming that as well. But that's a horse of a different color. We'll move on. The Trixie Strauss bird count is back. And for our local area at the Charon Audubon, it's going to be set for December 18th.
Right, and this is going to be counting birds that in a 15-mile circle, with the center being Hotchkiss School. So that brings us into not only the northwest corner towns here, but also Amenia and northeast in New York. So the Audubon Center is looking forward to, once again, counting all the winter birds, and that even includes birds that are in your bird feeder. So they're encouraging anybody to contact the Audubon Center if you want to sign up to be a counter. Receive a feeder watcher form.
All right, and coming up very soon, it's hard to believe that we're coming up, I think, on the 10th anniversary of the shooting that took place in Connecticut. But the Sandy Hook vigil continues and is back at the White Hart on December 14th.
Right, and that will be starting really at 5 o'clock. They're encouraging people to bring their own candle. It will be in memory of Sandy Hook, as you said, and we definitely will be out there to cover that.
All right. Moving on, and this applies directly to that. Kent, they are now in the process of public sessions where they're looking at hiring a second state trooper to work in the school, and when school's not in session, to become a second community trooper. And that basically comes up among concern of parents, once again, of exactly what we just heard about Sandy Hook, about safety in the schools.
Right. So this is the town has been weighing the idea of hiring a school resource officer in the form of a trooper at an expense of about $200,000 a year in their budget. And they've completed the town meeting. They are setting to be having a referendum vote on Thursday, December 15th, exactly 1 week from today. And the idea is that the officer would really be aware of the perimeter of the school, also play a role in mentoring safety for students and staff and certain school administrators, and then would also, would not handle discipline in the school, but would be available for other things in the town as needed. There were some questions by residents, about the need for this. Gene Speck, the first selectman, kind of indicated that the best way to approach security is through a layered approach, and so it seems to have pretty much moving forward. The Finance Committee is has given its green light. So the next thing is the town vote.
All right. And right below that, by the way, we've got the toy drive in Millerton that's going on. We've got Sunday the Country Food Drive for Christmas as well. And every year the Troop B police get together and they do a toy drive, and they've got they stuff a trooper car, and they accept toys at Troop B to be donated so it can be given to families in our area. So
right. I couldn't resist taking a photo of two police cruisers with big toy drive signs parked in front of them, in front of that classic 50s Troop B headquarters. And inside, in the lobby, there's a Christmas tree with a bunch of presents already beginning to collect underneath. So that's the idea. If you want to give a toy, just go to Troop B and walk in, and there's the tree, and put the present down underneath.
All right, and right next to that, of course, the FFA has their store open through the 21st. As long as they don't sell out like they did last year, it's open every day. You've got a nice picture there of the assembly of wreaths and all the people that are on deck and helping out in that.
Right. It was Patrick Sullivan took a pretty atmospheric photo. It's too bad it's in black and white, but it's a color photo, which you can see on Tri-Corner News. But it's the breaking down of all the pine, and then there's another photo of FFA volunteers and former FFA members, building wreaths, creating wreaths, and their second production night is actually tonight at 7 o'clock. Money goes to FFA National Convention and other travel.
All right, and you've got a story, of course. It was a holiday weekend in Salisbury on Saturday and Sunday, merry and bright, and a cold rain fell, but that may have damped some of the spirits, but they still went on with that weekend.
They definitely did. The Salisbury Band, Christmas Brass, and Hot Chocolate Society played in a sort of what looks like a trailer that's keeps them out of the rain, and people were, Lou Pacheri was out doing his best explaining things historic, and there was just a pretty good-sized crowd at the Scoville Memorial Library Story Hour. So everybody rallied around.
And in the obituary section, two very well-known people, we talked about this after it happened, Katie Gannett passed away in West Cornwall, and in Falls Village, Elizabeth Betsy Howie, two very well-known and very well-loved people in each one of those towns.
Yes, both of those obituaries, including an appreciation of Catherine Gannett, are really well worth reading because they give you not only the profile of each of these really special women, but they also really give you a sense of what the community is like and how they participated. Catherine Gannett and Elizabeth Howey both were major contributors to community life.
All right. And Falls Village, like I said, I think the Sharon Plan is going to open up the floodgates in the state of Connecticut for more town and private partnership. Now, Frontier is working not only with Falls Village, but with the Northwest Council of Governments, also a couple of other towns, to bring fiber internet service to these areas.
Right. And there's this happened Monday. The next meeting on this is December 14th, which will be an information meeting. The idea is that Frontier would wire the town for about 350 homes, connecting them for about $725,000. And some other homes in more outlying areas will have some expense, but the First Selectman Henry Todd thinks this is a fantastic deal, and so we're watching that.
All right. I want to move on to the Sharon Historical Society and Charcoal Annie.
Right. This is a wonderful story. The Sharon Historical Society put together an exhibit called The Life of Charcoal Annie. And it's about a woman who came to Sharon from France and who, you know, followed other family members here. And her real name was Augusta, but she was pretty much known as Charcoal Annie. And she did the kind of work that women, you know, would not be envisioned doing at the time, and supported the iron industry. And so the Sharon Historical Exhibit is really worth seeing. It's going to be there through January 14th, or until January 14th.
A perfect town to have a gingerbread house competition, Cornwall.
I know. And what's so wonderful is that I think there was more than one a gingerbread-covered bridge in the event. But this was a fun event down in Cornwall where the candy castles were submitted on display last Sunday. And there were some winners, a couple of young girls won for their gingerbread house competition entry, which was a series of little homes all sort of clustered together, too, really in what looked like a setting.
And I want to move back to Kent because we all hear about the opioid crisis and what it's done in the country, but locally Kent now is weighing allocation of the $8,000 they have of opioid funds.
Right. They are going to try to figure out how to best use this funding. The idea is that one of the things they could do is to use it to train people in overdoses.
All right, let's go on. Janet, we'll bring you in here, and that is the editorial pages and letters to the editor. The editorial, Support Early Childhood Education.
Right, this is looking at our area child care centers. If anybody missed Elias Sorge's, our correspondent's story on the child care centers in the area last week, do go back to the website, tricolornews.com, and read it, because it's critical to our communities that these centers survive and serve the young families. And so we talk about why that's so important and encourage people to support them.
All right. And, of course, you've got letters in favor of growth opportunities at the hospital. Now, Sharon Hospital is open, Sandy Hook. But also the grief journey, unwelcome, inevitable. That is a heck of a column.
It is. This is a new column that Eileen Epperson, who is a reverend and doctor and life coach, and has been working with these issues for 20 years. And you know, really, we all deal with them our entire lives, don't we? And she brings it all together, and will continue writing on this topic. Do contact her if you would have any questions or suggestions for her. She's enthusiastic about starting this column.
Then another guest commentary from Thomas Trowbridge about the library board weighing in on the hospital.
That's right. Tom Trowbridge sent this over. They make many good points, and I decided to use it as a guest commentary so that our readers see what the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon has shared with the state.
And then the body scientific, the past and future of COVID-19, and that is a wide open question.
Boy, and if anybody can tell us the details of that, it's Rich Kesson, who is an emeritus professor of pathology and cell biology at Columbia, and wrote so many columns for us during the course of time over the past few years to keep us enlightened on what was happening and where COVID was going all along. And so this is an introduction to, he's pulled all the columns together and you can go online and see them. And it's a brief history of the SARS-CoV-2 pandemic.
All right, let's switch over to Compass, John. Alexander Wilburn, getting high with my NFTL edible.
Yes, this is a bit of a fanciful column. He attended a live auction at Standard Space in Sharon on Saturday, and Kristen Worrell hosted it. This is a story that combines both the sort of notion of edibles and NFTs. He also has looked at in an upcoming Argazi Art Auction in Lakeville, a show that's a little bit more concrete, which has to do with Liz Dixheimer's series of art, a large acrylic.
I do have to admit, NFTs do confuse me.
Right.
I think that's the point, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is.
And the more people try to unconfuse me, I get more confused.
Yes,
no, they exist.
It is definitely one of those that when you start looking at it, you go, wait, this is designed, I believe, to confuse you.
Yeah, so, and don't forget, we also have a separate Compass that's 16 pages and talk, art, fashion, film, music, theater, it's all in there.
All right. Once again, tricornernews.com is the website. Of course, the Lakeville Journal and Millerton News. We will speak to you guys again next week. Have a great weekend.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. You too.
Take care.
Thank you.
That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal. Once again, find those stories and more at tricornernews.com.